Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the first meeting of the State Affairs Committee in the 25th Legislature. And this morning, we have present with us Andrea Dahl, one of our new members. Congratulations on your election and being on this committee. And a veteran in our Rules Chair, Representative John Coghill this morning. Representative Max Grunberg, who will keep us all straight. And how many years have you been on in the legislature now?
Too many. It's going to take me too long to count. I don't want to.
We're getting evasive answers already. And going down to this end, we have Representative Craig Johnson, who's been around Leslie Hall for a long time. Welcome to the committee. Welcome, and thank you for your election.
Thank you, sir.
Kyle Johansson, one of our new people, but he's again familiar with the legislature, very much so, in a staff position. And my vice chair, Bob Roses. And you've been in government activities, but not actually legislatively. So congratulations on your election, being on the committee. To begin with, I have an ethics disclosure to make of my own here. I have the world's worst head cold, and ethically speaking, I must tell you this, so don't get too near me. This morning, well, before I start, I thought I'd miss this. I got to tell you the story of this gavel. I was raised by my maternal grandparents, John and Edna Lynn. And Edna Lynn, my maternal grandmother, did not have a high school diploma. But when she was almost my age, which is upper 60s, I'll be 74 next month, but she was almost 70, and she went back to high school and got her diploma, and en route, she got this gavel as an award for the most improved student. And so every committee I've ever chaired here or elsewhere, I've always used her gavel as honor to my grandmother. So I'm very proud to use this. It's what I gaveled in with. As of this date, we've got 27 bills assigned to the State Affairs Committee, of which 10 bills address ethics legislation, and seven from the House and three from the Senate. We've been promised an ethics bill from the Palin administration. That tells me that legislators and the governor are making a positive response to the concerns of constituents all over the state. In a manner of speaking, our constituents are applying some heat, and I think we're beginning to see the light. The folks who elected us want us to act with all deliberate speed, to enact tough, but fair and reasonable, improved ethics legislation for the benefit of all concerned. Everybody knows, or should know, that no ethics legislation whatsoever will make an unethical person ethical. And that said, better ethics legislation can help keep good people out of trouble by making more clear what is and is not a conflict of interest, and even provide remedial help for what I would call the ethically challenged. Most of all, better ethics legislation can improve public trust of elected officials, which in turn can help bring about all manner of good things. As one example, I think, if we are successful in raising the level of trust between our constituents and the government, it should make it easier to trust what happens in the forthcoming gas line negotiations. Because in addition to all the different provisions we might have in the gas line, the most important provision is we have trust between the elected officials and what we're trying to do. We have before us today HB 10, which is a bipartisan bill with 10 prime co-sponsors, 5 Republicans and 5 Democrats. And we think a bipartisan approach to ethics legislation is critical, because ethics has no party label. Let me repeat that. Ethics has no party label. This is not a time for partisan politics. It's a time for improved ethics legislation. I think that's what the public wants, and that's what we should deliver. That said, I'm pleased we also have on today's agenda HB 20, which is another good ethics bill that addresses similar concerns to HB 20. And I'd like to say there are also other ethics bills that need to be looked at and will be looked at in one manner or another. As Governor Palin said in her State of the State address, she would like to see one ethics bill enacted rather than a hodgepodge of bills that attempt to address only one aspect of the ethics situation but could miss the big picture, possibly interfere with each other, and lead to unintended consequences. and I agree. It's not important, as far as I'm concerned, whose names appear on the bill. It's important that the committee come reason together to craft a good bill in a timely manner. With these thoughts in mind, I suggest that the committee consider hearing the various bills, HB 20 on today's agenda, maybe some of the others, and then combine the best of all the proposed ethics bills into one State Affairs Committee bill, or as another alternative, use Governor Palin's bill as a vehicle that combines the best parts of the various bills. I suggest we may want to have a subcommittee to try to put all these various parts together. That would create an omnibus bill, omnibus ethics bill that takes all of our sponsor names off of an enacted bill, which some of you may remember was one of the suggestions we heard during the ethics training we all received last Thursday. And for these reasons, I do not intend to move either HB 20 or HB 10 out of committee today. We need to consider these bills very, very carefully and do our best to avoid unintended consequences. And when various suggestions come forth from folks who may have to testify here, we should make our best effort, I think, to separate the message from the messenger. I want this committee to avoid what I would call paralysis by analysis. We know our bill won't be perfect because we're not perfect legislators. And no amount of analysis will make this bill perfect, or any other bill for that matter. The bottom line is we proceed with all deliberate speed to move a reasonable ethics bill sooner rather than later to the Judiciary Committee. To help us wade through the various ethics bills that are being offered, you'll find, where to go here? Here, this is in the packet, which is brought to us courtesy of the Alaska Budget Report, which makes a bit of a comparison between the various bills. It does not include in this some of the suggestions in the so-called white paper. As you can see from this grid, most of the bills are going in the same direction. With that thought in mind, I propose that we now consider the provisions of HB 10 and hear testimony by HB 10, which in brief, number one, bans legislators from accepting outside payment for work associated with legislative, political, or administrative actions while in office or 1 year thereafter. Two, requires legislators to produce greater detail in financial disclosures and work description for any outside consulting jobs. I use, quote, consulting, unquote. Three, requires legislative employees and legislators leaving service to file disclosures if the related relationship occurred during service. Representative Gardner, along with his staff assistant Iris Matthews and my staff assistant Mike Seeker, has put a tremendous amount of work and effort into preparing this bill that you have before you today, and I really want to thank them for all of their good work. But we all know that most of us up here are supported by our staff, and sometimes they're smarter than we are. So with that, I'd like to invite Berta Gardner to tell them more about the specifics of HB 10, and I would also add that Joyce Anderson of the Ethics Committee wants to testify today. We've invited her to testify before. She's up at the LIO in Anchorage, and she needs to testify as soon as possible because she has to leave before 9 o'clock so we can get that on the record. And what is your preference, Representative Gardner? Do you want her to make some comments now, or do you want to make introductory comments? How do you want to work that?
Thank you, Mr.
Well, we would have been further along had it not been for the technological breakdown.
I'd like to just make some brief introductory comments, and then we could have Ms. Anderson give her speech and her talk, and then my staff, Iris, who's worked on this for a year, can go through and do sort of a sectional presentation of the bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Representative Berta Gardner. I want to first thank the chair for his leadership on this issue and for his efforts to make the bill a good, solid piece of legislation that can engender bipartisan support, and for holding a hearing on this important issue, holding an early hearing. I think that it's essential in our efforts right now to rebuild public confidence in the integrity of the legislature. It's unfortunate that scandal and allegations of impropriety against just a few do taint the entire body. I've said before, and I'll say again, that the appearance of corruption can be as damaging as actual corruption. It destroys confidence, and that's really what we need to work on. This legislation, however, is not about any particular individual or individuals. It applies to all of us and all legislators to come, and it's designed to promote disclosure and through that increase public confidence. What people believe about the integrity of government and legislators is just of critical importance. And as the chair has said, legislation can't make a crook ethical. But we believe that this legislation, if passed, can help draw clear lines and improve confidence that the decisions that we make in the legislature are made for the benefit of Alaska and not for personal benefit. It's a complex subject. We've worked really closely with the Alaska Public Offices Commission, with legislative legal teams, with Joyce Anderson from Legislative Ethics, and we've tried really hard over the past interim to listen to their concerns and their suggestions and try to address them in a holistic way in this bill. I'm personally a big fan of our committee process. I have a great respect for it in the public process. I mean, there are brains better than mine, and somebody always has a new angle and a new idea, and every piece of legislation can be improved. So while I believe this is a good bill, and there are provisions in it to which I am absolutely committed, I know there's still room for improvement and suggestions, and I think all of us are open to some of that. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. And if we may, is Joyce Anderson on the line?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Thank you. Please identify yourself, and thank you for working with us this morning and for all the work you've done up to this point.
Representative Lynn and committee members, my name is Joyce Anderson. I'm the administrator for the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. And first of all, I'd like to say that I have worked closely with both Representative Gardner's office and Representative Lynn's office in trying to make the language clear in this particular bill. I want to make it clear, however, that I do not speak for the committee at this point because the committee has not had a chance to review the final version of the bill. I would like to say that for Section 2, I will be able to speak for the committee. The committee is very glad that this particular section was put in the bill, and what it does is it really cements the advisory opinion that was issued by the Ethics Committee in December of last year that said that legislators, legislative employees, and public members of the Ethics Committee will need to file disclosures, ethics disclosures, after they leave office. Anything that occurred while they were in office, even though the disclosure date may be after they have left office. So the committee is very has discussed that at their December meeting, and so they were very happy that this has been put in there because it was sort of indirectly applied, or excuse me, indirectly, I would say applied in the statute, and now it's going to be made very clear. I would also like to say that Section 1 of the bill, I think, is very good as well. It's a rather small change, but what it does is it takes having the provision of this chapter specifically applying to, say, a provision of the chapter. And so what it does is it opens it up a little bit and makes it not just a particular section, but makes it for the whole chapter. So I think that's very good. I'm just here to answer questions at this point. The Section 4 of the bill really has to do more with APOC. It's in the ethics section of the statute, but it's administered by APOC, so I'm going to refrain from testifying on that particular section. And then if anyone has any questions on Section 2, which has to do with authorizing the or not accepting compensation except if for the state of Alaska for work associated with legislative, administrative, or political action, I'm here to answer those questions. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. yes, Ms. Anderson. You know, over the years, the Joint Select Committee on Legislative Ethics has issued a number of opinions, written opinions, clarifying various aspects of the Legislative Ethics Act. Sometimes those opinions have been necessary because the Act itself has been ambiguously written. Are there any other opinions that we should look at to codify now.
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, yes, there are, and as a matter of fact, I am putting a list together, and I hope to have that list by the end of the week, of suggestions that have come from committee meetings in the past or from myself in dealing with the ethics code that either are technical changes or, as you stated, ambiguous and need to be corrected. So I will be providing that list to both the committee chair, Representative Lynn, the committee chair in House State Affairs, and the other committees that ethics bills will be going before.
Mr. Chair, as a former member of the committee, first of all, appreciate the good work the committee and you are doing and have done. And secondly, we have just on the committee, the select committee, just recently completed going over the policies and procedures which are equivalent to the regulations that that committee operates under. And Joyce has, I think, a pretty good basis for a number of technical changes that the committee had considered introducing to amend the Legislative Ethics Act and make it tighter and more clearly written. So I look forward to receiving that. I don't know if this would be a good vehicle, but these are mainly technical changes, folks, that I think are really well taken.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Anderson, in Section 2, there are a couple questions that I would at least like to kind of vet out a little bit. And the first question that comes to mind, Joyce could probably help us answer, is directly or by authorizing another to act on the legislator's behalf, the compensation, help me understand how that would be fleshed out. And since you worked on this specific language, Joyce, maybe you could help me understand what are the parameters of how you might ask another person to act, for example, in administrative or political action, because I just need to kind of get a mental grasp of what that other may act, because I wonder if we're going to have a hard time deciding if somebody's acting on their own behalf or being directed to act. So is there something specific I can get my hand on here?
Representative Coghill, through the chair, that language is in another part of the statute, and I think that that's why that language was put in there. And basically, in the other part of the statute, it says by authorizing another person to act, or another to act, it actually was referring what we've used in the past as a staff person. So in other words, a legislator may have done something or they may have authorized the legislative staff person to act. That's a very good question, and that may be something that needs to be looked at a little closer. There was not a lot of discussion regarding that particular language that I've had with the authors in drafting the bill.
And thank you. And I think, Mr. Chairman, I think that's what I understood it to mean at the beginning. But then I began to think how would that look if they acted on their own. And so the authorizing part is probably the operative. And I agree, we don't want to have a legislator asking or authorizing political action or things like that. But because you put the one-year thing on there, it might be kind of interesting. And I just saw it, so I'll be thinking about it, but that's the question first off.
Yes, Representative Cocker, we had this before the meeting this morning. We looked at 1 year thereafter. The way this is written, we may want to change that because this means a person couldn't be a harbor master or whatever. And Ms. Anderson, is this not covered in another section? I'm sorry. Is this not covered in another section?
Well, the language that Representative Lynn, the language that Representative Coghill was talking about is actually in another section of the code. And it has to do with, I'm going to look real quick here, it's in 2460.030. And just a second here.
I meant the 1 year thereafter.
The 1 year thereafter? No, that is not specifically in the code anywhere. The only prohibition on legislators at this point is that they cannot become a lobbyist for 1 year after they leave office. That is the only prohibition that I know of, as well as another one where if they've actually, and that is not in my code, so I'm speaking without having that actually firsthand, just looking at it, has to do with that they cannot take a job with the state if they have actually voted on that particular position.
Is it your opinion then we should or should not leave the 1 year thereafter?
I do believe, Representative Lynn, that the 1 year thereafter would be very hard to administer from the committee's point of view. I'm not saying it would be impossible. I'm just saying I think it would be very difficult.
Okay, we may want to look at that later on as we get into discussion of the bill. Representative Goldberg, then we're going to go back to Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. On the select committee, we struggled, I believe, or maybe it was just internally, I thought about, talked with my wife about, I don't remember, the fact that the committee's jurisdiction really ends and they can't administer any meaningful punishment or remedy after the person leaves office. And I'm going to ask three questions, Mr. Chair. Number one, do you believe that the committee's jurisdiction should be changed to allow them to take action on something appropriate after the person leaves office? And number two, if not, how would they enforce this for 1 year thereafter? Those are my first two questions.
Ms. Anderson?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair. First of all, the legislators are covered for 1 year after they leave office for the purpose of filing ethics complaints. A legislative employee, once they leave employment, the ethics committee no longer has any jurisdiction over them other than the fact that they may now have to file disclosures. So there's sort of a different threshold there. Also in the ethics code, there is a sanction section. So if a legislator, let's just use a legislator as an example, if a legislator were to leave office and violate this new section of the code that we're looking at today, if a complaint was filed, the ethics committee would have jurisdiction to look at that particular complaint. If they found that person in violation, the sanction section of the code would allow the committee to issue a fine of up to $5,000 if they felt appropriate. That is the only penalty that I see in here at this point. So in looking at the new language, there would really not be a penalty involved with a violation if it was for 1 year thereafter, unless a complaint was filed against a particular legislator.
And finally, Mr. Chair, the word compensation on line 3 of page 2 usually, at least legally, denotes income in the Internal Revenue Code sense. I could see somebody arguing legally that they weren't getting compensation, they were getting a gift or something. Might we say, rather than the word compensation, the phrase, quote, anything of value, unquote, or something else?
Yeah, well, they're talking about two different bills.
Representative, to the chair, Iris Matthews, staff to Representative Gardner. Compensation is actually defined in the statutes in 2469-90, and it's defined compensation means remuneration for personal services rendered, including salary, fees, commissions, bonuses, and similar payments, but does not include reimbursement for actual expenses incurred by a person.
Maybe I'll ask Ms. Matthews or somebody, maybe Ms. Anderson. I could see a sharp lawyer saying, well, this wasn't, that is really income, what you're defining there, but it was a gift.
Ms.
Any
Anderson?
Comments from anybody?
Well, anything of value is also defined in statute. Anything of value, benefit, or thing of value includes all matters, whether tangible or intangible, that could reasonably be considered to be a material advantage of material worth, use, or services to the person to whom it is conferred. The terms are intended to be interpreted broadly and encompass all matters that the recipient might find sufficiently desirable to do something in exchange for anything of value, benefit, or thing of value. And then it lists out some things that it does not include. And that's also in the packets in the definitions Section 2460-990.
Okay. Is there any other questions for Ms. Anderson before she has to leave? Anybody else in the committee?
One other question.
Representative Coghill.
Just to ponder, the exception is some value for state work associated with legislative, administrative, political action. What was your thinking, Ms. Anderson, on the political action part as far as being paid by the state? That would be a policy action?
Representative Coghill, through the chair, that's a very good question. When I met with both Representative Lynn and Representative Gardner's office, I expressed to them that all three of those terms have really not had any particular discussion by the Ethics Committee, and there are really not any advisory opinions that have dealt with those particular definitions in any part of the code. So I guess I would have to look at your question and actually maybe do a little bit more research and get back to you.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. I think if we're going to say you can be paid for the state for these actions, we want to be very clear what those are. And then if we're going to prohibit somebody from ever doing political action with some reward to it for a year after they're out of office, we want to take a good hard look at that. So if it's paid for by the state, that might be just as big a problem if it's paid for by anybody else. So as we get into the language of this, I think we need to consider that. So I'll be looking at ways we can help clarify that.
I agree. Thank you. Representative Gardner, do you want to continue? Ms. Anderson, anything else?
No, thank you. I will definitely listen to the rest of the meeting, and if there are any questions, I will certainly get back to the committee with answers. Thank you, Representative Lynn.
Thank you, and appreciate all of your help you've given us on this throughout the year here. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to turn the mic over to my staff, Iris Matthews, to go through the bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Iris?
Certainly. Ms. Anderson did some of my work for me, but essentially, when we look at this ethics bill, we think that it does three things. It prohibits certain types of, prohibits legislators from taking certain types of paid work outside of their legislative positions. It also requires greater disclosure for some of the outside work that legislators do. And then it clarifies the existing statutes, both the disclosure requirement and then just some, there's also some other cleanup language within it. So to look at that a little bit more closely, the meat of this bill is in sections 2, 3, and 4.
Would that 2B? Would you microphone a little closer, please?
Sure. The meat of this bill is really in sections 2, 3, and 4. Section 2 is the section that prohibits a legislator or a designee from accepting outside work for compensation associated with the legislative, political, or administrative action for the duration of their term in office and for 1 year thereafter. Legislative, political, and administrative actions are defined in 2460-990, and this section is not intended to prohibit legislators from working on behalf of their constituents or from volunteering on a political campaign or serving on a board. It's just intended to make sure that the work that they're paid for is their legislative work or is not associated with any sort of legislative behavior, whether that's writing a regulation or giving advice on how to pass a bill or that they're only paid by the state of Alaska for legislative type work. In Section 3, the section that Ms. Anderson was referring to, we are clarifying the existing ethics code disclosure requirements to make the requirement that the legislators leaving office and the legislative employees leaving employment also file that final disclosure. And in December, the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics had actually issued an advisory opinion to that effect, and this is just making it more clear in statute. Then finally, in Section 4, this is where we ask that when legislators fill out their disclosures, that they do so instead of using terms such as consulting, business services, personal services, that they provide a bit more information, and the term we've used in here is with a description sufficient to make clear to a person of ordinary understanding the specific services performed unless and only to the extent those services are required to be kept confidential under a state or federal law. And also a provision that they include the number of hours. And this requirement, I think, goes to the heart of what the public has asked for in terms of really wanting to know what people are doing for their money. Most of us know what an accountant does, a lawyer, but there's certain types of work that aren't very clear. And we have provisions in statute 2460.085 that says legislators can't be compensated unduly or above what something is worth. And so this is essentially giving both the public and the APOC and Ledge Ethics additional tools to look at disclosures and determine whether or not people are being compensated fairly. And it certainly does take into account that there's very specialized types of work that you get greater compensation for, and I don't think anyone is trying to prohibit that. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that anyone has.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
I should disclose that I'm a member of the bar of this state. I'm not currently practicing, but I do maintain my active license, and I practice family law. I'm looking at page 2, line 4, a little different, with a different issue. The word administrative. If I were to go back to practicing family law and took child support cases, either people seeking to collect child support or change child support or defending those cases before the Child Support Enforcement Division, would that now be prohibited?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, yes. Any sort of appearance at an administrative hearing would have to be prohibited under the statute. And I think that there's been a lot of discussion about that as we've talked about it. Ledge Ethics, as you're probably aware, issued an opinion a little over a year ago about legislators working on behalf of their constituents before administrative hearing officers. And there was the feeling that legislators should not be talking to the decision makers in those cases on these constituent issues. We think it's reasonable to expect that a legislator appearing before a hearing officer may be treated differently than another attorney who doesn't have that title.
Do you have any evidence to support that?
I don't have any direct evidence.
I'm talking about not the situations that have been just recently in the paper, but I'm talking about a situation such as the hypothetical that I gave, where most family lawyers do take child support cases, and many times they go before the Child Support Enforcement Division. That's a very serious allegation that you're making against a large number of attorneys, really, frankly, and other attorneys who practice maybe before the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and all kinds of agencies maybe taking procurement cases under the procurement code or anything that are, very many lawyers in this state do that. And are you aware of any circumstances where that sort of thing, because you're going to prohibit a whole profession from practicing or doing this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, if I might answer that, and we certainly don't intend to malign anybody's intention or behavior. What this bill is trying to do is simply clarify what is acceptable, what is honorable, and what is worthy of respect. And this particular provision is something that, for myself, I'm not fully committed to. We just want to make sure that people don't have the perception of taking advantage of their office in employment while they're legislators or shortly thereafter, that they don't trade on that title. And it may be that a year is draconian. It may be that 3 months is appropriate and proper, so that, I mean, we already have provisions that aren't always enforced about whether you can go from the legislature to the commissioner's office or be a lobbyist or something like that, and just because it's sort of deemed to be unfair advantage.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't so concerned. I wasn't so concerned about the time, because many attorneys, and I'm using this as an example just because I'm familiar with it, but other professions too, but just it is, folks, simply an example, couldn't serve, particularly in a session. If we're going to go to 90 days, it's It's only a quarter of the year, and the rest of the year people have to make a living. If they couldn't go before an agency, and these agencies have two distinct types of functions. One is maybe a rulemaking or a rate-making, quasi-legislative function. But the other, and the thing that I'm more concerned about, is the quasi-adjudicative function. And I think that, just as one example, that attorneys should be able to appear before an agency in a quasi-adjudicative function. It's like going before a judge.
Mr. Chair,
I think what we're getting at is if I'm a member of the public and I have a child support case and I want to hire an attorney, do I think I have a better chance if I hire representative attorney or Mr. Average attorney for my case?
I guess I would respond.
Representative Grunberg?
You'd have to ask the public, obviously, but I think in dealing, that would be like saying you can't go before a judge because you're going to get better treatment as an attorney before a superior court judge or practicing before the Supreme Court of the state. These people now, with the Administrative Law Judges Act that we have, and the hearing officers, they're held to a quasi-judicial standard of conduct. Anyway, I just wanted to flag that as being one of my concerns.
I think you raised a valid point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gardner, I think that is true, and it is. I understand your concern. At the same time, what we're trying to get at is that we hold legislators to a higher standard, and that as we become public officials, as private citizens become public officials, we certainly do give up some opportunities. We give up privacy. We hold our lives up to a microscope, and we disclose a lot of things that as private citizens we never would. And I think this sort of falls into that same category, and the committee may want to amend it or adjust it in some way, and I wouldn't say that that's not a practical thing to do.
Any other questions? Representative Rosers?
Yes. We already, through the chair, thank you. We've already heard several testimony on issues where there are some concerns that we need to take a very close look at this. And some of the previous testimony talked about the 1 year thereafter language that we need to reevaluate and reconsider. The question that I would have for you would be, how do you see this reevaluation of the 1 year thereafter any different from the retroactivity clauses that you have stated in here? Because I have some concerns about the retroactivity.
Through the chair, this is Representative Gardner. In retroactivity, are you referring to the disclosure requirements for people who are leaving office?
Yeah, the concern that I have, let me clarify. If we have an issue of in this bill that we're currently dealing with, mm-hmm. and if we pass this legislation as it is written, there's a requirement for legislators and legislative employees or anybody that's authorized by that legislature to be prohibited for 1 year from doing this type of work. But yet we have another clause in here where we want to go back retroactively and require a change in behavior of those that have already left office.
I see.
And so if we're going to hold ourselves to a certain standard, why would we want to then go back and change the conditions under which other people have already served? So I think we have a considerable conflict with the retroactivity statements. So if you could explain.
Representative Roses, through the chair, Iris Matthews. The advisory opinion that the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics.
Move the microphone a little bit, please.
The advisory opinion that the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics issued already does cover the legislators that were currently leaving office. So this was just trying to be in step with what that was requiring in the advisory opinion, and that is that the folks that left office will be filing disclosures.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Grunberg.
On this point, you're talking about opinion 07-3, the last one that just came out. And I was a member of the committee when that was issued. I don't think that would require a retroactivity clause because you're just saying that now if they have left office before a certain date, they have to file this now. I'd like us to take a legal look at that, as I'm not sure that that requires a retroactivity. You're not requiring them to do anything retroactive. You're requiring them to do something now if they fit into a category of people who left office after April 9 of last year.
Through the chair, Representative Gruberg, this is Representative Gardner. I'm looking at the example of reporting deadlines, and I believe
it's from the advisor.
It's from the advisory opinion. A legislator leaving office.
Representative Gruberg, through the chair, it's actually an example that was. This is Iris Matthews. This was an example that was given in the advisor, which is the newsletter that the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics puts out every. Month or other
right.
month, and so they use some examples of reporting deadlines, which did include the legislators that are leaving off that left office on January 16th, and did say that they would be subject to the March 15th reporting requirements.
I'd like to get a legal opinion on that, because that was put out by staff, not necessarily even discussed in the committee.
Representative Rogers, want
yes,
to follow up on that?
I would. Yeah. That's exactly the point that I wanted to make, simply because I don't have a problem with this legislation. I think it needs to be done. Obviously, there's a few little areas that we need to tweak to make sure that it's, you know, the fairness doctrine is instituted here. But the other part that I do have some concern with is when the prior legislators were sworn into office, they had a set of regulations and guidelines and ethics that they were supposed to follow, and I'll, you know, highlight the supposed to. But they, and then to go back now and try to clarify situations under which they were sworn in and say we're going to force you to, or we're going to require through this piece of legislation that they had nothing to do with and we're not sworn in under, to then go back and hold them to a different standard from what they were expected in the beginning, it gives me a little bit of concern, and I agree with Representative that we need to take a closer look at this from a legal perspective.
Through the chair, this is Representative Gardner. I think that is an ambiguous point in the law currently. And so the opinion that came out from, that Representative Mrs. Anderson referred to from December, basically clarified that. But then she did sort of ask us to make sure that the law is not ambiguous anymore, and they determined that legislators who left office in January of this year still have to file disclosures. I mean, that they're currently being required to. We're just clarifying it in statute. Mm.
Thank you. Through the chair, I appreciate that, but I will let you know that will be an area that I intend to try to amend on this, simply because I have no problem with clarification for the future. Mm-hmm. I do have trouble going back trying to clarify the past.
And through the chair, that might be something that we'd want to talk with Ms. Anderson about the next time the bill is heard.
Thank you. Any other questions for Representative Gardner or Representative Gardenberg?
I should put on the record a concern that I have expressed to Representative Gardner and Ms. Matthews, and just to let the public and the other members of the committee know of my concern, and that is subsection B at the top of page 3. Requiring the disclosure of the total number of hours worked on a particular services. I don't have a problem with that in an appropriate case, but you don't pay your dentist by the minute for putting on a crown, or if you go to an attorney in a personal injury case, it's usually based on a contingency fee. The results achieved, things like that. And I think there needs to be some language in there that would possibly allow APOC or somebody to use a different standard if with possibly a proper explanation, if the compensation were based on anything other than hourly wages. And I would just ask, I don't know how many of this committee, members of the legislature, work for hourly wages. I know that I did as an attorney, because in a family law, you can't take a child custody case on a contingency. That's horrible. You pay it on an hourly basis. We're like that. But even a taxi driver gets paid by the mile, not unless they're waiting by the minute. So I think we just need to have some way of dealing with that.
Broaden it.
Yeah, and under appropriate safeguards. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coghill.
And I, on that point, I had also struggled with it. So if the intent is we're trying to say we really want to understand that it's value for what you're trading, mm-hmm. we want to disclose that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're, generally speaking, I've lived in this world where you trade hours for dollars, and you can get a fairly close value of what your worth is worth, what worker's worth, whether it's $6 an hour or $28 an hour, whatever. But in the knowledge-based economy in which we live, if you're a computer guy, you can do some trading in short time, and the value is much more significant than, say, the $40, $50 an hour. So I think we need to look at, if we're going to disclose the value for the work, that is somehow an industry norm, that's fine. But I think when we start trying to say by hours, that what we're going to do is we're going to pick on those who do trade their life for a dollar's hour's worth, and those who have, and so they can disclose very cleanly. But those who maybe work in a knowledge-based world, if their value seems inordinate to an hour's base, which is going to happen, I can tell you it's going to happen, because we pay people, quite frankly, for what they know. Even quarterbacks, they're not for their physical prowess, they know how to throw a ball, you know. And we pay them significantly for that. So I think what we need to do is look at what is an industry norm rather than trying to reduce it down to hours. And so I think that's what we want to get to, if I understand correctly, is we don't want people getting this inordinate amount of money just because they're a legislator. And I agree with that. So we need to work on this section.
Yeah. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. And I know that Representative Gruenberg has had a longstanding concern about this provision. But to me, in some ways, this is the heart of the bill. The whole idea is to give the public confidence that when legislators are paid by an outside individual or agency, that they are actually doing some meaningful work, and they're not being paid for taking a position or for lobbying or for something like that. And yes, there definitely are. I mean, the individual who helped negotiate the gas pipeline contract, people would probably be stunned to see the hourly rate. But he's a worldwide expert, and there is provision currently in the code to sort of evaluate that he's got a unique offer. Yes, exactly. And I think that in the interests of confidence by the public, we may just have to trade some of that. And so I'm quite committed to this particular provision, but I am willing to talk with APOC and see if they can come up with some other language that will satisfy these concerns while keeping the bill a strong bill.
Mr.
Chair. We all know what we want. Just, mm-hmm. You know, how do we get
exactly.
there?
Exactly.
It was just one sentence. As I mentioned to Ms. Matthews yesterday, in total industries, even that are non-professional, like fishermen and stuff, they're paid by the catch. And I just want to be fair and get exactly the result that's public confidence that you're both talking about. And I'd like you to continue thinking about that and dialoguing. Thank you, Mr.
Representative Gardner?
Mr. Chair, we have somebody from APLC available to speak
yes,
to this particular issue today.
Yes, I'm getting in. I can't. Would somebody translate this?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Representative Johnson.
There's another issue, and we're talking a little bit about Representative Coghill's and your computer use and brain power. As a former commission salesperson, there would be a time when I would work 1 hour and maybe be lucky and have an extraordinary income, where another would take me 10 or 12 or 15 hours on the same project to generate the same revenue. And you're going to have this, if you report it, you're going to have a disproportionate. So I think commissions are something else we should look at in this, because there's an awful lot of people that generate their living, real estate, for example. All commissions, and I don't think that's addressed in here either.
Through the chair, real estate are actually, they're licensed professionals, so they don't have to disclose in the same detail, but they can say, you know, that for that particular contract, it's not how much time they, but that it's an estimate of the number of times, because a realtor who maybe shows one house, lists it, and makes the money also spent time designing an ad and running it and all of those things. So it's an estimate. It's not an exact amount that on this, it took me an hour to write up this contract, because there's other things that go into it as well.
And I guess I should disclose I am a real estate licensee. Representative Johnson.
And possibly real estate was not a good example, but there are a lot of people where it's not as cut and dried on a contract that are in commission.
Right.
That just happen to be at the right place at the right time and make an extraordinary commission where other people work hard and don't get that. And there's a lot of that. So I think that's another area we ought to look at in terms of commissioned.
Through the
chair. It
would
be awfully hard to do an hourly rate.
Representative Gardner?
Well, one thing to say is that under our current law, you could report $100,000 services with no other information. And while this proposal may be imperfect, it still, I think, is better to say $100,000 for 10 hours, $100,000, none of your business.
I guess, you know, we don't want to have the perfect get in the way of the possible.
Exactly.
I want to get to APOC, Ms. Miles, on as soon as I can here. And I do want to at least get the other HB 20 on the table before we run out of time. Any other comments, Reverend Gardner, at this point? Because we can come back to you.
Thank you. Not at this time.
Anybody else in committee? With that, I'd like to, Ms. Miles, are you there?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I am.
Good morning. Thank you for appearing before us. State your name and let us know what you think about all this.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Brooke Miles. I am the Executive Director for the Alaska Public Offices Commission. On behalf of the Commission, thank you for an opportunity to direct comments to House Bill 10 this morning. This bill, for the first time in Alaska law, codifies the fact that dividends from a limited liability company are income and must be reported as such. The Commission appreciates this clarification, and it will provide a useful tool to us in enforcing financial disclosure laws. In addition, this bill provides that when a person, when a legislator, a person subject to the legislative ethics law, in particular a legislator, is providing professional services for remuneration, that those services have to be described with sufficient detail for the reader to understand what the legislator actually did for his employer or client. I would like to just basically comment on the requirement as to the number of hours spent. Something of this nature, the number of hours, or if the committee ultimately finds a different reporting mechanism to include a time amount, will provide an extremely useful tool to the Legislative Ethics Committee, in that the Legislative Ethics Code and the Code of Conduct, Big E Ethics, we have a measure that prohibits legislators from being paid for work that is not commensurate with the amount they're paid. And so should an allegation be made to the committee that a legislator has violated this section of law, having a standard that's disclosed on their public disclosure statement would be a very useful tool to the committee. Lastly, I would like to place my appreciation. I've worked with Representative Gardner's staff on this bill a lot, and the Commission appreciates very much the clarity that is now in sub C, and I'm speaking at page 3 on line 3, where if a legislator is required to report a source of income, then they include that amount, and that's without the caveat that that income have an interest in legislative, administrative, or political action. That is a very subjective caveat in law and has caused confusion and lack of full reporting in the past in an accidental way. So this measure will not have fiscal impact on the work of the commission. And with that said, Mr. Chairman, it concludes my comments. I'd be happy to address questions from you or your committee members.
Thank you very much. Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. First, on your last point, ma'am, through the chair, Ms. Miles, I totally support the language that we are eliminating page 3, lines 4 through 6. But I note that you're not eliminating the same language on subsection 3, lines 9 through 13. Shouldn't we eliminate it there, too?
Mr. Chairman, if I may remark, subsection 3 is not within the commission's purview. That is a section that is administered by the committee. However, and so I really can't speak for the committee, but speaking from APOC's experience with that language, I would recommend not including it. But in subsection 3, this speaks to the legislator or the legislative employee or the public members accepting fees before state agencies. Is that correct?
No. Do you have a copy of the bill in front of you?
I do.
Okay, I'm on page 3, lines 9 and 10. See, on up above, you're eliminating something that's tough to prove.
Mm-hmm.
Known to have a substantial interest in legislative, administrative, or political action.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, to Representative Greenberg. Yes, I would. I do think it would be easier to administer if we remove that language on line 10.
Yeah, 9 and 10. That's my first question. My second question, Mr. Chair, is on page 2, line 24. I know we've recently had a case involving an LLC, a limited liability company, but you could have a dividend the question is, and I'm looking at this now from the point of view of hopefully a sharp lawyer. If I were advising somebody on this, I would say, number one, don't call it a dividend, and number two, set up something that's not an LLC. And if we want this disclosure and everything to be as tight as possible, my question to you, Ms. Miles, is should we include, as well as dividend, anything else of value or something? I don't have a particular term, so it's broader than the term dividend, because it's easy to call something other than a dividend. And secondly, should we say from entity, any kind of an entity, so whether it's a sole proprietorship or a partnership or a limited liability partnership or an LLC or a corporation, so they can't wiggle around this, which they'll try to do.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Greenberg, yes, we would find any clarification language to be wonderful, acceptable, and we'd be grateful for it. Yes, it's true that when these laws were originally written, you know, we talk about partnerships, we talk about corporations, we even talk about the professional corporations, as those of you who are attorneys realize, because you have to disclose clients above a certain threshold. But limited liability companies did not exist. So in terms of looking to the future and new ways of organizing companies will be created, we would like to make sure that we encompass all.
Okay, any other questions for Ms. Miles from the committee? Okay. Anything else you'd like to present? I want to make sure we have time to get SB 20. I don't know why I keep saying SB, HB 20 on the table here. But do we have anybody else other than Steve Clary from the public to testify online? excuse me, at ease. Online here. We only have one person online, I believe that's Steve Clary, for public testimony. And on our public testimony, we want to make sure that we stick to this bill and comments about it, and we're not going to mention anybody's any legislator's name, past or present, or any administrative name, past or present. Steve Clary, are you there?
I am, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you for testifying. Please give us your name and position.
Sure. My name is Steve Clary. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, better known by its acronym ACPIRG, and we've been around since 1974. In addition to consumer protection, our membership is really concerned about ethical and efficient government, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify today on HB 10.
And we're concerned about the same thing.
Sounds good. I did attend a forum this weekend put on by the League of Women Voters and Alaska Common Ground, in which both Ms. Miles and Ms. Anderson, as well as the other public members of the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, participated. There were about 50 or 60 of us here in Anchorage, and I believe a similar forum gathered around 100 folks down in Juneau earlier in the week. So,
yes, and I was present at the one in Juneau also, along with several of my colleagues.
Great, and I also know that you had a couple days of intense education down there as well. So it's really nice to see Alaska focusing on this. We're really excited to see what comes out of this. As you mentioned earlier, Representative Lynn, with putting together all the things that everybody's put in the hopper and awaiting Governor Palin's input as well. So we're happy to see this process go forward. ACPIRG is in favor of HB 10 for a lot of the reasons that have been stated earlier. It's fairly simple in its intent to make sure that legislators aren't using their office incorrectly and that they are disclosing the work that they're doing. Critical to having a citizen legislature is that the public knows what their legislators are doing for the money that they're earning outside of their work in government, and to make sure that they are actually doing work for that money and not using their office improperly. So I see HB 10 as a great start, a very five Republicans, five Democrats, a great bipartisan effort to get the ethics wheel rolling for some reform, and I applaud your hearing this bill so soon in the legislative session, and I appreciate your diligence on this, and I look forward to putting together the bills and to seeing how that process can bring about what's best for Alaskans and for our state government. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I would point out, though, that nothing is simple. We could sponsor a bill in favor of the sun coming up tomorrow, and it would not be simple. It was my intention, of course, to have put. We have all these bills. I think I said 27 bills before the State Affairs Committee, and I wanted very definitely to put ethics at the head of the line for obvious reasons. I want to thank you for your testimony. Any questions to Mr. Ockberg? Excuse me, Mr. Clary, who's with Ockberg. If not, thank you very much.
Thank you. There is someone else here who I believe would like to tell. Oh, no, never mind.
Okay. Thank you very much. At that point, I'd like to hold this bill until another hearing, and I want to hear HB 20 next, and then after that's concluded, I'm going to appoint a subcommittee to look at some of this thing. So thank you very much, everybody, on HB 10 there. Speaker Harris. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I am John Harris, representative from District 12, and I am the sponsor of House Bill 20. I'm going to have my staff go through the details, but I want to kind of follow up, Mr. Chairman, on what you and the committee talked about earlier and maybe make some philosophical points of view as well. Just listening to that discussion, this is a lawyer's delight. Representative Gruenberg is in his heyday here, listening to all this. And what You know, over the years, what's happened with ethics and with legislators and with the law is the more complicated it gets, the more the lawyers love it. And that's life, I guess. But, you know, Thomas Jefferson said many years ago, the best government is the least complicated or the simplest government, whatever interpretation you want to make of it. And we have, over the years, made government more and more complicated, more and more difficult to administer, and more difficult to serve, quite frankly. So, you know, it's my position, and I think most legislators' positions, that we should make it as convenient and as easy for as many people in this state to qualify to be a legislator as possible. I don't think many people would disagree with that. Democrats, Republicans, Independents, you name it, you want this, the job of being a legislator, being a governor, being whatever, not to have so many rules and regulations that the average person can't be a legislator. And to that end, I fear that what we do, of course, is that the more rules and regulations we put on, the more restrictions we put on, means that more and more people can't qualify to be a legislator. And as Representative Gruenberg mentioned, the provisions in there about a lawyer or about the profession of being a lawyer, you know, if we, and our bill doesn't mention at this point in time, but it's been talked about, do you prohibit anybody who would practice before the bar, through the bar before any state agency would be prohibited, you know, that sort of thing. That really, in essence, prohibits a whole group of people from being eligible to be a legislator, probably. So is that what we want? I don't know, but you know, I talked to my good friend Representative Berkowitz after the white paper that he and the other gentleman put forward to the governor, and I asked him, I said, you know, what was the intent type of thing, and we went on and had a philosophical conversation, and quite honestly, he and I are good friends, and we can do that, and worked in a bipartisan way when he was the minority leader, so I have no problem with that, but. You know, he mentioned something, and I want to mention this to the committee. One of the biggest ethical issues we have probably here is the Constitutional Budget Reserve. And probably 95% of the people in this state don't understand that it takes a three-quarter vote of the legislature to take money from the CBR. And guess what happens? There's vote trading going on every day that it's being considered. On both sides. It's not a partisan issue. It's on both sides. Some will say, you know, I won't give you my vote because I don't want to spend so much money. Others will say, I won't give you my vote unless if you give me a capital project. Is that vote trading? I think so. Is that not what the public said they don't want? I think so. So should we do away with the CBR? The public put it in. The public has to take it away. A variety of things we as legislators can talk about that the public should be educated about. I'm not saying that they shouldn't, but they should. They should understand some of the things that the public put in place that create problems for legislators. They create atmospheres for legislators. Everything that you talked about here this morning on House Bill 10, I'll get it, House Bill, Mr. Chairman, creates a difficulty. If you want to make it simple, I mean, if you truly want to make it simple, then you take away the ability of a legislator to work outside of a legislator entirely. And the only way you can do that is you have to pay a legislator enough money so they can afford to be one without taking any other kind of income. I don't have that suggestion at this point in time, but I'm just saying, if you want to make it simple, you prohibit them from doing anything else while they're a legislator, but you have to compensate them enough money so you can have anybody, whether it be a ditch digger that qualifies, you know, have been in the state long enough and is old enough and all that sort of stuff, or the very wealthiest person in the state, they would have to divest themselves of the income that they have. You know, I mean, they would not be able to receive it, and that makes it very difficult. But they still would have to report what they own. I mean, I don't disagree with that the reporting still has to be there, but you still have to look at and say, how do we make it the very best to get the most amount of people to qualify to be a legislator? And I think the public wants that. They want all of us. I mean, we talk about a citizen legislator, but if you restrict the type of things you can do, which is fine, and you also, you know, disclose the type of things, many people obviously in the private sector don't want a lot of their business dealings disclosed. I mean, it's that, so they won't run because they don't want to be subject to the APOC rules and all that. And that's fine. I mean, I understand all that. But you are keeping a lot of very, very good people, Democrats and Republicans alike. It's not a partisan issue. You have very wealthy Democratic business people. You have very wealthy Republican business people. They won't run for public office. And they are maybe some of the best people suited to do so, just simply because they don't want to be under all the scrutiny of APOC. And that's fine. But if you have everybody making the same amount of money, whether they're a multi-billionaire or a ditch digger as a legislator, then you kind of eliminate a lot of that. You know, they're working for a set amount of money, and that's all they can work for. But at least you do. But that's the philosophy. It's not in our bills. It's just, I think the public should be aware that that's an option out there the legislature could consider. And and many states have gone to that. Of course, many states have gone to, you know, shorter sessions, session every 2 years, a biennial budget, a whole bunch of things like that that also get us into difficulties at times.
You don't believe that professional legislature would make anybody more ethical than it would be otherwise? Is somebody going to be ethical, or the citizen legislature or professional legislature?
That's right.
I'm the same person whether I'm working in citizen legislature or if I'm a professional and do it all year and get a salary and do nothing else. Am I not the same person?
That's right. You are. The issue is, can you legislate morality? No. Can you legislate really a person's ethics? No. I mean, you can hit guidelines, but you can't stop a person from being unethical if they're going to be. And you have to have the guidelines and the laws in place that say, okay, if you're going to act like that, then there's a penalty to it. So we're not disagreeing with that at all.
Yeah.
But what Mr. Chairman, what we're talking about here is compensation. I mean, what we were talking about earlier is compensation. And just because a person makes a lot of money doesn't mean that they're unethical. I think that's your point. You know, I could work, and Representative Gruenberg, to your point earlier, said, does anybody work for a salary? I do. I'm a Teamster. Last summer, I worked 0 hours. 0 hours. Because, as you know, we're on call. We're on call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, at the behest of the governor. And if you remember what the governor did, the governor had us under the threat of a call all summer and all fall. And for my type of work, that meant I could do no work at all, because I could not give my employers my word that I'd be able to stay there longer than 2 weeks, because that's all it took was the governor for 15 days to give us notice to come down here. Now, obviously, I think that's very unfair to my type of professional work, but, you know, that's what I signed up to do it, and so I couldn't work. But I'm not whining about it. I'm just saying that points out something to the public. You know, not many people in the public would endure that. And they wouldn't run again, probably, or they wouldn't participate. So, I mean, there are a lot of issues out here that we need to be aware of. Mr. Chairman, what I want to say, I've sponsored House Bill 20, after the white paper was released to the governor, I and a number of our members went and talked to the governor. And then I had a good long weekend to think about it. I've talked to the governor since I came back. The governor is going to be sponsoring an ethics bill herself. I've asked the governor to incorporate some of the thoughts that are in HB 10, some of the thoughts that are in HB 20, and I've asked the governor if she would, if she and her people would actually be the carrier of a comprehensive ethics bill for all of us. And I think, quite frankly, we get around the who's carrying the bill, who's not, who's the sponsor, who's not. The governor ran on this issue. I mean, it was one of her keynote issues of ethics reform and honor and transparency and all that type of thing for the legislature as well as for the administration, the court system, all of them. And so, to that end, Mr. Chairman, when the governor does submit her bill, you will obviously get it, and I will send it to you. But I will be working very closely with the administration to help their bill move along and be a vehicle to address all these issues in a comprehensive manner for the betterment of the state, for the betterment of the public's trust in all of us, and for a great working relationship with the administration and with the minority and majority members of both the House and Senate and the Ethics Committee and APOC. So with that, maybe, Tom, do you want to go through just
Mr. Chair, just one. I don't know if you heard before you came in, I had made in my opening comments, heard those or not, I said we were going to hear HB 10 and HB 20 and either combine those into a state affairs bill or perhaps tack it on to the governor's bill, and I'll be happy to do it either way. It might be better to go with the governor's bill. She certainly has more horsepower than the rest of us.
I gave that some thought myself.
Yeah. But I still think we need to hear HB 10 and HB 20, some of the other bills perhaps.
Sure.
And I'm contemplating doing a subcommittee, trying to go through a cafeteria and pick out the best parts of each of these bills. So if we do, in fact, use the governor's bill as a vehicle, and I have no problem with that at all, that we can know what we want to drop into that bill and what we don't want to drop into it. You made a point just in the side. Gosh, I don't like to argue with my boss, you know, the speaker. But
you do it all the time. It's no problem. Okay. I get used to it. 39 other people do too.
You say you can't legislate morality, right? I don't know. Thou shalt not kill is a Western morality. Ten Commandments.
Doesn't work very well. There's a lot of murders every day, right?
But we also, that's exactly right. But we do have a civil law that says, murder is a crime, and you have to drive on the right side of the freeway so you don't kill somebody. Thou shalt not steal. Well, we have laws against burglary, robbery, and so on. So we legislate morality, somebody's morality, all the time with our civil law. We use the...
Right. Mr. Chairman, I'm not arguing with you that there shouldn't be guidelines. All I'm saying is you can't, because you have guidelines, doesn't mean you're going to be able to prohibit somebody if they want to violate the law from doing it. You're not going to make a person necessarily better by having a law that prohibits them from doing something. The history of the world is that people tend to make up their own mind what they're going to do.
I totally agree. Like I said, no legislation, however gifted it might be, is going to make an unethical person ethical.
That's right.
No matter who carries the bill, no matter what bill it is.
That's right. I appreciate your comments, Mr. Chairman, on working with the administration and working with the minority. I have to give a lot of credit to a number of members of the minority who both last year and this year have worked hard on understanding. Quite frankly, the actions of some legislators have put all of us in a very uncomfortable position, because
these are alleged actions.
The accused actions or whatever, but the issues before us make us uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
All of us, I think, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, whoever it happens to be, because even though we may not be associated with it, we are associated with it by the fact that we're all in the same type of work. And just to point out, Representative Gruenberg's profession. An attorney. If an attorney gets barred, disbarred. Like it or not, the whole profession gets a little black mark out there. They say, well, are they all the same? Well, they're not, obviously, and they never will be. But the public looks at it and says, geez, they're all a bunch of crooks. And that's kind of what they look at with us when our members get thrown out there in the mix. It's a very uncomfortable feeling. I don't like to be associated with that type of feeling, and I don't think any of the other members do either. And so we certainly owe it to the public to try and to make our body, the legislature, as ethical as possible, and to certainly set the guidelines for that type of activity. And again, as I say, I think almost every member here is very ethical, but we certainly have to, again, take the high road and assure the public that we're here for their best interest. And I've mentioned a couple of things that go on in the legislature that if the public were a little more aware of it, they probably would not be as excited or would be less excited about the way we act sometimes.
Well, I agree. And in a newspaper editorial, I guess it came out the first part of September, some people have made some allegations that legislature is fundamentally corrupt, and I take great exception to that because, we are a diverse group of legislators elected by a diverse group of constituents out there. And, we're all over the map on these kinds of things. And just like attorneys, car salesmen, real estate people, anybody else, we are a very diverse group. And I think that... most everybody is honest, hardworking, ethical people trying to do your best we can in a very difficult situation, very often very controversial areas that we tend to get into, and as we pointed out earlier, nothing is simple. I made the comment that if I sponsored the bill in favor of the sun coming up tomorrow morning, it would still be controversial, and somebody might be trying to subvert the process. Representative Gruenberg.
Just one thing. Following up on your comment through the chair, Mr. Speaker, I would like if the governor, last I had heard the governor's bill was going to be limited to the Executive Ethics Act.
Not after yesterday.
Okay. Well, I would like, and since we are talking to the people of this state on through the television too, to invite the governor before dealing with the legislative stuff to make certain that the minority is included. The Democrats are included, House minority, and I assume the Senate as well, in those discussions, because to have real credibility, this bill should have the support of the four corners. You have a table, it's got to have four legs generally, and that would be the Democrats, the Republicans, the governor, and the press.
Uh-huh.
And if it's seen to be partisan, or if it's seen to be advancing a hidden agenda that is not in the public's interest, then the entire public servant profession will receive the black eye you spoke of. So I would like to see the Democrats included in that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, President Gruenberg through the chair, I think you know the governor probably as well as I do, and I think the governor may have run as a Republican, but I think wants to be, I don't speak for the governor, obviously, but I believe she wants to be very inclusive. She wants to deal with Democrats and Republicans and independents and nonpartisans, all of those. And I'm sure that if you want to talk to her, that she would assure you that was the case. But I don't know if there's anybody here with the governor's office today. But the point of the matter is, I don't fear at all. In fact, I believe the governor will be very open and honest and direct in covering all of those entities that you talked about, including the press. Including the court system, including Democrats and Republicans alike. So,
thank you.
And if I have anything to say about it, which I think I'll have some input, obviously, as all of us will, I will ask the governor to make sure that's the case. Because you're absolutely right. If this ends up being a partisan issue, of issue of who's more ethical than the other, or who's trying to stretch the ethic laws to benefit one group or another, or whatever, It'll never pass the muster of the public. So,
well, we can't get in the situation. Excuse me. Situation of, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the most ethical of us all? Republicans, Democrats, you know, these guys, those guys. This is not. It has to be a bill for all of us. And I said earlier again, whoever sponsors this bill, some of us or the governor or whoever, really. The bill should be sponsored by our constituents.
That's right.
It's what it's all about.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, if I may follow up on that just briefly, the consultant that was hired that gave us an ethics overview last week mentioned the fact that it's always going to be the group that's in power that gets nailed with the ethics complaints more often than not, because they are subject. They are subject to more.
The nail that stands out is one
that's
hammered.
Because they are more of the decision makers. It's just simply the way our system works. The Republicans are in power; they tend to get more in trouble. And when the Democrats are in power, they tend to get in more trouble. And you know, back and forth. So it isn't a. It's just a human nature thing or whatever it is. But it's not a blame game at all. And I think we make a big mistake. If we try to impose that on either of our groups or on the governor or anybody else, that this, again, Representative Gruenberg, you have my assurances, and I think I've given you my word in the past. I've held to it, and I will hold to it again this time. That this will not be a partisan issue. on behalf of the governor, on behalf of ourselves. And I think we need to sit down in cooperation with each other and try to figure out what is best overall for the body, for the state, and for the country.
Chair, your word has always been good, as has the chair and the other members I've seen on really both sides of the aisle. And I appreciate that.
Thank you. Did you want to proceed with
Do you want to go through it all, or have we talked about it enough? We probably actually talked about it enough. It's pretty well spelled out. In fact, a lot of what we have in our bill is not different than what's in HB 10, maybe some different wording and that sort of thing.
Well, like I said earlier, you know, we have all these, I think there's seven different bills in the House addressing ethics, and even the white paper. We're all going the same direction here. You know, there are differences, obviously, and different emphasis, but we're all going the same direction. All want the same thing.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you taking up our bill and the other bill early in the session. This issue again is very important on the social and on the ethic climate of the legislature. We certainly have other major issues that we have before us, in the PERS and TERS issue and the gas line and all that. But this is a huge public confidence issue in the body itself. And I appreciate you taking it up this quickly.
Well, you know, trust is the common denominator between all these different bills, PERS, TERS, gas pipeline, whatever. So then are you going to go through some of the specifics of this bill, or would you?
Mr. Chairman, I think the Speaker has addressed a number of the issues. Just to make a point, House Bill 20 is very broad. We started it out broad intentionally because we knew there was going to be a lot of discussion. We wanted a lot of this discussion to take place in the committee process, so we started out with a broad bill as possible, work through some of the issues that are included in House Bill 20. I just wanted to make that point. We know that the provisions in here aren't going to look as they are now when we get a product out of this committee, but I just thought that point needed to be made. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the gentleman? Okay. If not, I would like to appoint a subcommittee to look at HB 10, HB 20, perhaps some of the other bills, perhaps the white paper, and whatever the governor comes out with in her paper, and then report back to the committee the next time we hear these bills or however we put this together. And I'd like to ask, with your permission, if you want Representative Roses, Representative Grunberg, Representative Coghill, to serve on that committee, and the others on the committee are invited to participate in that insofar as we can do it without getting the whole committee. We're not making decisions, as a committee. Do you have any comment on that, Representative Coghill? How many people can work in a subcommittee and still be proper?
This is no small task. Representative Roses, give me the three names again.
I thought Representative Roses, Representative Grunberg, Representative Coghill, with the others invited, and perhaps other legislators not on this committee, if they have input.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a good start to a committee, and the reason I say start is because we will. I'll be glad to do it. First of all,
I know you're very busy,
but it's a big issue. And we do need to get the other sponsors of the other bills with some input. And whether we have to do that in committee or through the subcommittee, I'm open to discussion on. But at the very least, if I understand your directive, is to look at the parts where the bills dovetail together, come up with similar issues, so that we can categorize them, where there might be differences and what the policy discussions would be, and where the governor would land in the same issue. So we could come up with a template of issues where the bills are similar and where there are single issue differences that we might want to consider. I think we can come up with a template like that, but I don't know that we want to come up with a CS at the beginning.
Well, no, if we get the template, put it together, then we can drop that,
right.
On a CS, or we can drop it onto the governor.
What I would suggest
is whatever.
The first thing that we'd look at is what Joyce Anderson was going to bring to this committee, and that was her look at what are some of the needs from her perspective, and look at how the bills have lined up, what those needs are, what the governors are going to suggest, and then we can bring back to the committee what that looks like in some kind of a matrix. And that would, to me, be the best start before there's any further work from the subcommittee. I would suggest you have us bring back that kind of a report. I'll defer to Representative Gruenberg, who has done some of this kind of work on subcommittees before, but it seems to me like that'd be the best direction.
And could I ask you to be the chair of the subcommittee?
I'd be glad to, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair?
One moment.
Sure.
Nancy, what's our schedule for the next couple of hearings?
Well, we have overviews. Do you want me to reschedule those?
Well, no. You tell me what's on for our next meeting.
Corrections and administration, I think.
We have correction, administration, overviews, but we want to proceed to all deliberate speed on this.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Just for what it's worth, we certainly want to wait until we get the information from the Ethics Committee and the governor before we. So my suggestion is at least 10 days before we come back with a report, at the very least.
Okay. Representative Gruenberg.
First of all, I appreciate your appointments. I think it's a good subcommittee. The three of us can do that, and I hope other people participate, too. I would like to suggest that when we next meet on the floor.
On the House floor.
Yeah. That you or the subcommittee chair make an announcement that if people are working on ethics bills, that they try to drop them in the hopper as quickly as possible so that the subcommittee can have as much stuff in front of it as early as possible and look at the entire universe.
I don't know of any other bills other than what we...
I'm working on...
You're working on one.
Yeah, but maybe I'm the only one. If not, I can...
All living Americans are working on ethics bills.
Mr. Chairman, what I will do along that line, if you so wish, that I will try to announce when we meet as a subcommittee. That way we can get a committee room large enough to have an informal discussion on how we would put some kind of a matrix together.
Yeah.
So I'd certainly do that.
And I'd want this to be an open meeting.
Absolutely.
So anybody can come that would like to, media, gavel to gavel, whatever. Anything else to come before the committee today? Representative Roses.
Mr. Chair, I did have a comment to make. Since I was elected by the majority House members to be the House rep on the Ethics Committee, I wanted to make sure that there wasn't anybody sitting here that felt like that was going to be an issue for me serving on this subcommittee that's going to help set the scope of what the decisions are going to be if we have to later on enforce them.
Representative Gardner is the Democratic member of that committee, too. No, I don't think so. I think it's great that you're on it. I think it's a very good appointment in both cases.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm the only member of this subcommittee that hasn't been on the Ethics Committee.
By the way, we need to confirm you two. You ought to ask to make it done on Wednesday. Okay, good.
Anything else? I hope that next time I come back, I hope I haven't infected everybody in the room here with whatever I've got.
And we hope so as well.
Yeah, I know that.
By the way, I asked the chair to sit next to him. Had I known, I would have asked for the ends.
Well, you wanted to sit next to me, Max, and now you suffer the consequences. Well, thank you very much for this first meeting. I think it's been a good one. The meeting is adjourned ahead of time at about 10:05.